searches for his living soul, searches places that he don't wanna go, looks for love and for hope. He finds a world that's abandoned them both. Yeah, yeah. All the lies tell us just who to be. Can't set you free. What we need is that love, the love that comforts from heaven above.
Hi, I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love. Praise God. Welcome to What the World Needs Now, and as always, I want to remind everybody that every single one of us are called and gifted, and by virtue of our baptism, we are called to go out into the world, and as our Holy Father says, not only to make a difference by virtue of our baptism, but a radical difference. And we have our interview today is about a priest, an Irish priest who did just that. He not only, by virtue of his baptism, made a difference in the world, but he made a radical difference. And each one of us are called to do that in our own world, our own parts of our world, to do everything we can do to be God's hands and his feet and his voice, and in particularly, showing the heart of God, his heart, his mercy, and his love. And, of course, Francis says something that just grabbed my heart so powerfully when he called for the Jubilee Year of Mercy. And he tells us that mercy is the heartbeat of the gospel. And I just love that. And the interview we have today on Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty is indeed a man whose heartbeat really did beat for the gospel. And so I'd like to introduce to you today William Duino Jr. He's an associate editor. William is a longtime contributing editor of Inside the Vatican magazine. He's a researcher and writer, specializing in religions, history, cultures. In addition to writing for ITV, Duino is an online columnist for First Things magazine, and that's where we came across this article that he had written. And it's all about, a man that was filled with holy boldness, a man that was filled with courage and strength, and a man who had a powerful mission. And with that, we're going to introduce Mr. William Duino Jr. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Mr. Duino.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, of course, being Irish, I have a special place in my heart for Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. And I don't think you can come from any part of Ireland, quite frankly, that he hasn't been a force and a unifier, because he was a man that was filled with the love and mercy of God, even to his own, putting his own life in jeopardy many, many times. And so our interview today is just about that. First and foremost, Mr. Duino, I'd like to ask you, what What was it that drew you? Was it just an assignment, or did you come across Monsignor Hughes' life and want to write about it? Was it something personal, or were you assigned it and came to know this man?
I think it was a little of all of the above. I've done extensive research, particularly on the rescue efforts of Pope Pius XII, who up until recently has been unjustly criticized, but the tables are turning on him as well, and now people are speaking much more favorably about Pius XII. But in the course of researching Pope Pius XII's wartime record, the Church's wartime record, particularly against Nazism and on behalf of persecuted Jews, I came across the marvelous figure. Now, I had heard of him, and I had known him, but I'd never really studied his whole life. So, of course, once I came across Monsignor O'Flaherty's story, I tried to gather everything I could about that was written about him, and not only biographies, but I went back into old newspapers and saw what his friends had said about him at the time of his passing in 1963, and also I got in touch with many people, including organizations in Ireland that are rightfully so trying to make his name much better known. This is one of the great heroes. Not only of the Church, but of World War II, Monsignor O'Flaherty is responsible, virtually by himself, although he led an underground network effort, of saving over 6,500 Allied soldiers and many, many persecuted Jews. The reason he was so significant is because he did this in spite of being warned repeatedly by the Nazis not to violate the Vatican's neutral status. And even though he was threatened with death multiple times, he was told not to cross where the Nazis had set up a barricade, and he did so many times. He went out into disguise in order to help the prisoners of war that had escaped during the after Mussolini was overthrown. Let me go back a little bit. There were thousands of prisoners of war, British and French and so forth, that had escaped, and they were but then when the Nazis took over Rome again in late 1943. These prisoners of war were in danger of being recaptured. But it was Monsignor O'Flaherty that came to their defense, and he led this heroic underground network, setting up safe houses for them, providing them with food and giving them special shelter and providing them with needed documents and all in all protecting them from the constant presence of the murderous fascists and the Nazis, who themselves wanted to kill him. There was one Nazi in particular, the Lieutenant Colonel Herbert Kappler, notorious head of the Gestapo in Rome, who discovered what O'Flaherty was up to, and he vowed to kill him if he ever stepped outside of Vatican City, which the Monsignor nevertheless did, as I just mentioned, often in disguise. Now, the Vatican allowed this operation to continue, but it was extremely dangerous to do so because O'Flaherty and everyone else knew that if he was captured and the Nazis found out about what he was doing, they would perhaps invade the Vatican itself, where many innocent people, including Jews, were being protected. So it was a very daring gamut that he was involved with. But I do want to add one thing. He did, in fact, and this has been questioned up until recently, he did, in fact, have the support of Pope Pius XII, even though it was a very risky gamut. And the reason I mention that is because there's a famous film that some of your listeners may have scene called The Scarlet and the Black. With Gregory Peck. And it's a very good film, for the most part, who stars as Monsignor O'Flaherty. And Christopher Plummer, famous, of course, for The Sound of Music, but also excellent in this film, he is General Kappler. And there's the only criticism I have of that film is that Pope Pius XII, who was portrayed by the great late British actor Sir John Gielgud, he is portrayed as somewhat aloof and sort of indifferent to the rescue efforts of Monsignor O'Flaherty. And I happen to know, and what I try to do and document in my article for First Things, which people can look up on the internet if they want, it's simply called Hugh O'Flaherty, Ireland's Shining Priest. They just put that in there, Google, search it, Hugh O'Flaherty, Ireland's Shining Priest, and they'll pop right up. But what I tried to show is that Pope Pius XII gave his direct and strong support to Monsignor O'Flaherty, and this has been confirmed by his biographers and also people I've interviewed, And I think if Monsignor Flaherty was alive today, he'd be the first to champion Pope Pius XII. So I think that that's my only criticism of the film, which I otherwise would recommend, that they should have portrayed Pius XII more forcefully and more strong, just as strong as Monsignor O'Flaherty.
Yeah, you know, I saw that movie and I loved it. And it wasn't until years later myself that I read a book. Matter of fact, it was about the Lion of Munster. And I saw then that Pope Pius XII really took a beating up, if you will, many of the Jews, and it was Jews in the end that came to redeem the truth that he saved. It was through him, although he had to be very subtle about it, and he had to sort of be under the guise of not really playing an active part. He very much was involved in the saving of so many Jews, and as you said, giving the go ahead to these holy bold men, and in particular Monsignor O'Flaherty.
Yeah, well, on that score, let me just quickly, before we get back to the great Monsignor, recommend three or four books which some of your listeners may want to read if they want to pursue this. Number one, a brand new book has just come out. It's fantastic. It's called The Church of Spies, The Pope's Secret War Against Hitler by Mark Riebling. I actually reviewed this book for National Review, the prominent conservative magazine founded by William F. Buckley, a few months back, and it's a fantastic book. It shows that Pope Pius XII was actively involved, not only in rescuing Jews, but in trying to overthrow Hitler during the war. You know, there were many various plots by brave anti-Nazi German generals. One of them was memorized in the film by Tom Cruise, Valkyrie, which I also did a review of. But that was one of the later plots in 1944, and that, of course, tragically did not succeed, and the Nazis rounded up all the conspirators and killed them. But the point is that all throughout the war, very early on in the war, the anti-Nazi generals were making contacts with Pope Pius XII, and they got his approval to contact the British to try to involve everyone in a plot to overthrow Hitler. Now,
that's
tragically,
right.
Plots did not succeed. Anyway, that book reveals how anti-Nazi and how anti-Hitler Pius XII was. Another book, excellent book, by Rabbi David Dallin is called The Myth of Hitler's Pope. And then finally, I contributed an extensive 80,000-word commentary and annotated bibliography in an anthology called The Pius War, Answers to the Critics of Pius XII. That was published a few years ago. I hope to update that soon. But any one of those three books, and also the book by Professor Ronald Rischlach, Hitler, the War, and the Pope, is outstanding. So there's lots of excellent, scholarly, well-researched books out there that demolish the allegations against Pius XII. And this new book, Church of Spies, is sensational because it's not written by someone who is known to be, you know, an active Catholic or someone who's known as a Catholic leader.
Right.
He's an independent, highly respected author. An expert on intelligence named Mark Riebling, and he looked at all the evidence for many, many years, and he came down squarely on the side of Pius XII. So it's good that the more this evidence comes out, the more the truth is coming out. And that's, you know, it brings us back to Monsignor O'Flaherty, because there's so much evidence out there that's still waiting to be publicized. And I'm hoping and praying that perhaps this will come to the attention, of the Pope, much more, because, you know, some people think that he should be under consideration for sainthood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he is that level of, he was that kind of man.
Right, right. And as I said, I know I did an interview, well, I read the book first, and it was written by a Jew where I first heard of von Galen, of course, you know, which they call the Lion of Munster, and now his cause is open, and I certainly hope that that your work and the works of others will bring this to the attention of the Vatican and the Holy Father for Monsignor O'Flaherty's bravery, his heroism, and his mercy.
Absolutely. One of the things I want to mention, since we're now in the Jubilee Year of Mercy, is how incredibly merciful Monsignor O'Flaherty was in spite of everything that threatened him. And as is well known from his story, although many of your listeners may not know this, is that after the war, After his deadly enemy, Colonel Herbert Kapler, the head of the Nazi Gestapo in Rome, was captured and imprisoned. This is the man, let us recall, that wanted to kill Monsignor Flaherty. He was broken, he was abandoned. He, of course, was despised because of all the killings that he had been responsible for. And who was the one man who actually went to visit him in prison while he was suffering in prison? None other than the very man that Kapler tried to kill, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. So he forgave and ministered to the very man, Kapler, the Nazi, who tried to murder him. And not only did he minister to him, he actually ended up successfully converting Kapler before he died. Kapler, the Nazi, died a Catholic. Despite all his horrendous sins, he died a Catholic because of the mercy and the humanity and the compassion of Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. That's just one of many, many aspects of his character and why I believe truly he was a saint.
Yeah. And, of course, one of the other things which I'm hoping will stand out a little bit to our Holy Father, Pope Francesco, is that Father Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty was a Jesuit himself. Is that not correct?
I'm not sure about that. I will check on that. I think he was a... I'm sorry. I know he was Jesuit trained, and he was ordained in 1925, and then he became a Monsignor. Yeah, he went to a Jesuit school in County Limerick, and he was trained to become a missionary priest, and then he was sent to Rome and was ordained in 1925. I'm not sure he was a Jesuit, but he certainly had... Yes, he was Jesuit trained. So that's close enough. But in any event, I think, though, that, yes, it would be wonderful if, you know, the Pope is so busy with so many other activities, if when he has the time, if someone brings Monsignor O'Flaherty's life and heroism to his attention, I am sure Pope Francis would be the first to champion his cause, because it so beautifully encapsulates his message of serving as a holy priest and not allowing hatred to overcome you, and forgiving your enemies. I mean, you can't imagine a more dangerous, evil situation that Monsignor O'Flaherty was, and yet he rose above it, and he acted the way that Christians are supposed to act. Many find that incomprehensible, but he did so. So I think he's a model figure. And there's one other thing that I want to mention. It's very important, and it shows why he's also a very contemporary figure, why Monsignor O'Flaherty is very important for today's Catholic Church. As I mentioned briefly in the article toward its end, there's been a lot of terrible scandals and division in Ireland, sadly, a historically very Catholic country, because of the sex abuse scandals among the clergy and the hostility, the increasing secularism of society there, and there's been deep, deep divisions. Well, I point out in my article, one of the few priest that is not controversial at all anywhere in Ireland and that is beloved by everyone, whether they're atheists, whether they're Catholic, whether they're sort of middle of the road, you know, half believers, half secular, is Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. And my hope is that the more he is honored, the more his story becomes known, he can become a sort of healing bond and help Ireland overcome the terrible divisions that have recently beset it.
Yeah, I hear that he brings the North and the South together for sure under that point. And as you said, believers and non-believers alike. I'll have to look that up the next time I go back to Ireland now. I would love to see that statue. Now, yes. Is that in Kerry also, his home?
Well, I know that they unveiled a statue in Killarney, I think.
In Killarney,
okay. Is that how you pronounce it? Killarney Island?
Okay.
They honored a man, it was but 2 years ago, they erected a huge statue. I think there's numerous statues, and there's all sorts of, you know, places and institutions and schools named after him. But in particular, there was a gathering several years ago on the 50th anniversary of his death. And at that anniversary, this is what I was saying about how he brings people together. Many politicians, priests, ordinary Catholics all came together, and a lot of these people in other contexts, they fight, you know, like cats and dogs about all sorts of political matters and moral matters and church matters, but because Monsignor O'Flaherty is such a beloved figure, he brought them together. And someone pointed out to me that this 50th anniversary celebration of Monsignor O'Flaherty was one of the first time in 5 or 6 years, you know, since so many of these divisions have deepened, that many people who basically were not on speaking terms with one another came together and celebrated and this great priest. So that, I think, to me, is providential.
Yeah.
I mean, to see the tragedies that have overcome Ireland, and yet to see them, in a sense, with this, I call it a baby step, but hopefully there'll be more in the future, people who were at each other's throats, so to speak, come together and try to overcome these things and rally around one man, an Irish Catholic priest, no less, that they can all unify about, is very inspiring to me. So there's so many aspects of his life, the heroic aspects during World War II, the fact that he was a model of what a Catholic priest deserves to be, his acts of mercy toward the men, the very men who tried to murder him, and how even in his death he is bringing and help, and he's bringing unity and healing divisions in Ireland. I mean, there's so many things that warrant the beginning of a sainthood clause for him. There's just too many to detail.
And one of the things that really touched my heart is how he got involved with the Jews. I mean, wasn't he actually brought to Rome? He must have had a heart like the Holy Father, one of such great mercy, because at one point he was there just, wasn't he, for like pilots, to rescue pilots and so forth, and then became...
Well, yeah, yes, as I said, he was there to rescue the immediate danger that his operation that he took charge of was the fact that after Mussolini was overthrown, he had been holding a lot of prisoners of war that were fighting with the Great Britain and the France and the United States. They were suddenly released because Mussolini fled for his life, although he was given protection by the Germans,
right,
until they finally killed him later on, the people themselves, when the Germans were defeated. But after he was overthrown, a lot of these anti-fascist German British and French and U.S. prisoners of war were all running throughout the countryside, throughout Italy. But when the Germans occupied Rome quickly thereafter, filling in the vacuum that Mussolini had, they were then in danger again. But to get to your point, it was not just the prisoners of war, it was also the Jews. I spoke specifically to one of the elderly nuns. She was still living when I spoke to her several years ago, and I quoted her in my article.
Yes.
Sister Noreen Denhy, missionary Franciscan sister, and she testified the following. I just want to quote what she said. She said, "I am very happy to tell you that I personally worked with Monsignor O'Flaherty in Rome during the tragic war years when he risked his life in order to help the Jews in Rome. Time after time, Monsignor came to our Franciscan generalate, located at that time in the Via Nicola Fabrizio, and he often asked us to house the persecuted Jews. Since we had a very large institution, able to accommodate as many as 14 or 15 at any one time." So that's just one of many testimonies of people that worked with Monsignor O'Flaherty about how he helped not just the prisoners of war, but Jews themselves.
He used to actually leave, even if after he was threatened. I mean, he was threatened. They went to the Holy Father, and he was told never, ever to leave the Vatican.
Right,
if he did, he was going to be grabbed and taken care of and snuffed out right then and there.
The Germans painted a long white line around Vatican City, and they said, they warned Monsignor Fadi, if you dare to cross this line, we will kill you. We will capture you and kill you. But he needed to cross the line. Under disguise always, because he had to get to the people that were not close, right inside Vatican City, but were outside hiding. He wanted to, the prisoners of war and the Jews, he wanted to make sure they had proper protection, they were getting the food they needed, and so forth. So every time he crossed that line, which was virtually every week, he took his life he was risking his life. And amazingly, God preserved him, thank God. And, and after the war, thankfully, he was, by the way, recognized after the war, at least by some countries. He got awards from Great Britain, from the United States, and he was honored. But a lot of this has all since been forgotten. As I was mentioning to you, You know, if you ask the average Catholic today, put aside, you know, some Irish Catholics that may be aware of him and other scholars that may be aware of him, but if you ask the average Catholic walking down the street today, have they ever heard of or do they know anything about Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty, they'll give you a blank stare. They don't know. This is why it's so important to bring his story again to the Catholic faithful.
Yeah. I mean, he was really such an incredible human being. I mean, even to risk his life, he had, I don't know if this is an accurate figure, but wasn't it 500 of those fleeing right in the Vatican? They were hidden and housed?
Yeah, no one knows the exact numbers, but there were hundreds of Jews in the Vatican itself.
Yeah.
Overall, throughout Vatican City, there were something like 5,000 to 8,000, and there were many more thousands of prisoners of war. There were anti-Nazis, fascists, who were in danger of being killed. Monsignor O'Flaherty was right in the thick of helping and protecting these people. I mean, he was right there, and he could have been arrested at any time. And that he did all this, out of his own heart is just, it just shows the depth of and the beauty of his life.
Yeah, an amazing, courageous, heroic man. Wasn't he nicknamed the Vatican Scarlet Pimpernel?
Yeah, he was, and that is because of the Scarlet Pimpernel was a famous novel in some time, I think in the 19th century, by a British novelist, and it was about a British baron who secretly, during the French Revolution, would secretly rescue those about to be executed. And what he would do in order to taunt and tease those who were trying to, the French revolutionaries that were trying to capture him, is to leave behind a card a picture of the Scarlet Pimpernel, which is flower, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they named it. So, now that was, of course, a fictitious story, but he was the real Scarlet Pimpernel.
Yep.
And that's what he, and by, in fact, I wanted to mention one thing. In fact, that people at the time, and I discovered this by examining the diplomatic dispatches, they were amazed at his courage and his heroism. I have one envoy, Michael Mac White, the Irish envoy to Italy at the time, saying, he was cabling back to Dublin, he said, it would not be a surprise to me if Monsignor Flaherty found himself in a concentration camp and soon. So, you know, that's the kind of, heroism that they admired and thought about when they thought about Monsignor O'Flaherty.
Yeah, an amazing human being. If I can hold you over for a little bit.
Yes.
We have to take a little break, and then we'll be right back. I'm talking to William DeWino Jr., associate editor. He is a longtime contributing editor of Inside the Vatican magazine. By the way, I love that magazine. He's a researcher, writer, specializing in religion, history, and culture. In addition to writing for ITV, DeWino is an online columnist for First Things magazine. So we're delighted to have him with us today. This is a story that really needs to be told so that more people can become aware. Particularly in this time, in this age, in this moment in history in the church, we're in need to see these heroic men and women in the Catholic Church that are willing to lay down their lives for their faith and for their fellow man. And Monsignor O'Flaherty was one of them. So we're going to take a little break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. We thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. Catholic Radio shares in the ministry of the Church to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth, and in his sign Catholic Radio has been doing so for over 30 years. Kathleen McCarthy and in his sign have been empowered by the Holy Spirit to bring the fire of God's healing love to the world through Catholic Radio and the Internet. With God's grace, his word goes out, healing hearts and transforming lives. In his sign, proclaims the culture of life loud and clear in a culture of death. The ministry's mission is to evangelize, catechize, and to be a voice for those who have no voice, proclaiming the truth that will set all people free. To our faithful family and friends who stand with us, thank you for being missionaries with us by supporting In His Sign Catholic Radio. Without your monthly support of prayer and financial giving, our mission would not be able to continue. Our mission voice would be silenced. To our new listeners, please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA 19010. Or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
Well, we're back again, and we're blessed to have with us today a young man, William Dewino Jr., and he is an associate editor of Inside the Vatican magazine, among many other things. And he wrote an article that was fascinating to us. I happened to be well aware of Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty and the heroic actions of his life. So when we came across this and it was put on my desk, I was really looking forward to this interview. Mr. Dewino, I will tell you this. I think it says so much that Rome's, what was it, almost 6,000 Jews, that are only 1,000 could be found by the Nazis. I mean, that has to say something for the work, untirelessly work, selfless work, of these great heroes, and many of them were Catholic.
It certainly does. In fact, just to thank you for mentioning that. I don't want to interrupt, but I want to. I'm so excited about telling the story because I've interviewed so many people involved. And the fact is that at the time of the Nazi takeover of Rome, first it was thought that there were 8,000. More recent research has revealed there were up to 10,000 to 12,000 Jews. And of these, over 85% to 95% were saved. Now, it is true, we couldn't save them all. Very few countries, there was virtually no Nazi-occupied area that saved as many as Italy. Bulgaria saved an awful lot of Jews, and some other countries did, but no one comes as close to Italy, really, as countrywide, as saving as many Jews, that's a remarkable record in light of the fact that the Nazis, you know, controlled much of their country during the war. And it does say something. And it's not a coincidence that the country that saved at least 85% of its Jewish population was led by the Pope of Rome, Pope Pius XII.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people don't realize that, and particularly the people in this day and age don't really realize. I mean, this is a saint for our times. I mean, he died in 63? And he worked almost up until the very end when he came back to Ireland. Right before that, he was still traveling around, settling the European refugees. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, he was still working even after the close and everything was settled. He was still working with refugees and even went to Israel and helped the Jewish people get settled there that he helped rescue, right?
Yes, after the war, he did, you know, he was just getting started, so to speak. I mean,
yeah.
he was moving as quickly as, and as you say, after the war, first of all, he received many awards, including, for example, the Commander of the Order of the British Empire, the U.S. Medal of Freedom. He was also honored by Canada and Australia, and he regularly visited, as I pointed out, the Colonel Kapler and converted him. In fact, it took until 1959, that was well after the war, to actually convert Kapler, but he did. And then what happened tragically, even as Monsignor Flaherty was spreading his work of mercy all throughout Europe and elsewhere, in 1960, he suffered a serious stroke during Mass in Rome, and he was forced to return to Ireland. And then shortly before his stroke, he was about to be confirmed as the papal nuncio to Tanzania. See, in his early life, he had actually been a diplomat to a number of foreign countries, and now he was going to resume that activity and bring the gospel to the people of Tanzania. He had worked, for example, in Egypt, in Santo Domingo, and in Czechoslovakia. And late in life, after his war experiences, he was now going back to the diplomatic mission and bringing the gospel to people in Tanzania. But tragically, he suffered this stroke. And so he moved back to Ireland, and he moved to, Cather Savine?
Yeah,
I'm not sure how you
pronounce
it. Right. To live with his sister, at whose home he finally died on October 30th, 1963. He was age 65. And he's buried in the cemetery of Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church in Cather Savine. I'm not sure how you pronounce
Cather Savine, yep.
Right. It's these difficult Irish, but wonderfully favorable names.
Yeah.
And there is a monument, as I point out, in Killarney and elsewhere, and in fact also a grove of trees dedicated to his memory in the Killarney National Park. One thing I wanted to mention, Kathleen, that I didn't, and I want to, because I think, again, it goes to, we already spoke about his merciful, incredible heart overcoming the hostility he felt toward Kapler and actually forgiving him and converting him. Or also, even before he became a priest, here's what's remarkable. He was the first of four children. He was born in 1898 to a wonderful Irish couple named James and Margaret O'Flaherty. And he was brought up in Ireland during the so-called Troubles. This is the intense conflict between the Irish Catholic Protestants. And what happened is that he was traumatized by this conflict because several of his Catholic friends were killed by a group called the Black and Tans, which was this marauding group which brutally enforced British domination over the country. Now, cut more ahead, what happens is that after he becomes a Catholic priest, and Italy is involved in the war, and they capture British and French soldiers, the Vatican sends their papal nuncio in Italy, as well as Monsignor O'Flaherty, to visit the prisoners of war, some of whom are British. Now, remember, Monsignor Flaherty has hostility in his heart and anger toward the British because of what they did to his friends when he was young. But once he sees the British prisoners of war, you know, in this desperate situation in the prisoner of war camps, he was deeply moved by their plight, and that helped him overcome his own hard feelings toward the British. And then, of course, during the war itself, he later then saves British, the very people he had felt such intense anger for, because some of them had killed his friends when he was young. But this again shows you overcoming hatred, overcoming prejudice, allowing the love of Christ to come into your heart and to embrace people. This is what Pope Francis has been preaching, as well as his predecessors, Pope Benedict and St. John Paul II, and all the other popes of the 20th century, Pius XII certainly, who Monsignor O'Flaherty served under. This is the heart and soul of Monsignor O'Flaherty, that he was able not only to rescue people and to resist evil, but to transform his own heart and overcome his own prejudices and embrace everyone.
You know, may I call you William? I'm talking
sure,
to
really.
William Dewine Jr. here. And one of the things, ironically, I was just prayed with and ministered to a beautiful young woman today. And I was saying just that, you know, that when we're filled with anger and resentment and hurt and legitimate anger, it is only God that can heal our hearts. But once we are open to that, then he uses each of us as wounded healers. That's exactly what he did with Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. What a remarkable human being he was. You know, one of the things I thought was really neat, maybe in these last little bit we have, maybe you could also share his humility, because he even received papal medals, and he sent them all home to his sister, right? I mean, he graciously accepted them, but he literally sent all his... He didn't brag about them. He didn't wear them.
He never wrote about his... From a historian standpoint, I'm sort of, jealous that he did not and upset. But from a Catholic standpoint, he did exactly the right thing. He was extremely humble. He knows that God saw what he did in private, and he will be honored for that. But he never bragged it. He just thought this was what every Christian's obligation was to do. So even though he was enormously hero, he never thought of himself as a hero.
Yeah.
And he was extremely humble man. They even had, you remember the famous show, It's Your Life?
Yes.
When they filmed the show, they couldn't do it with him because he was so ill. But what they did instead, they brought on one of the British prisoners of war, did a show on him. But then at the end, they were able to bring out Monsignor O'Flaherty, who had helped... the British prisoner of war they were profiling, as well as thousands of others. So he was at least allowed to make an appearance on the show. So that's how they honored the great Monsignor O'Flaherty on the famous show, It's Your Life.
Wow.
So I think, though, that what you say is so true. I think when we look to Monsignor O'Flaherty, it's not just as a hero, it's as someone who allowed himself to be transformed by the gospel in every part and act of his life. And he did so at a time of almost incomprehensible horror and evil. That is someone to look up to. That is someone to admire. And that's what Christianity can mean to all of us in the modern world.
Absolutely. You know, we have a few some time left. If you would like to call in, maybe you have a question you'd like to ask in regards to Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. And, of course, we have William Dewine Jr. here. And he did a remarkable article on Monsignor, and he's here. If you have a question you'd like to ask, give us a call, 610-527-2906. Whoops, I do that all the time. 610-527-2906, or you can call 1-888-343-2484. This is going out globally. And you can call, toll free anywhere in the United States and give us, maybe have a question. Maybe you'd like to make a comment about the program. I can actually say that Mr. William Dewine Jr. has done a beautiful job, very articulate about how he researched Monsignor O'Flaherty, and we're blessed to have him on the air. I got a message, and we did allude to it in the beginning when I said, isn't that the same person that they did the movie Scarlet and the Black? And I got a question, is it the same? And I it is. So those of you who have seen that movie Scarlet and the Black, Of course, they didn't have all the information they have today, as you know, our guest so articulately spoke, that since all this research came out, the movie was very accurate, except they sort of had the Holy Father, Pope Pius XII, sort of aloof from it all, when actually it was with his permission. I mean, they, you know, so many of them were actually hidden right in the Vatican. So that could not have happened without the Holy Father's permission. So not only was he giving his assent to the work that Monsignor did, he was giving his blessing to that courage, that holy boldness that Monsignor so beautifully represented, that we're all called to be as Christians. And so, yes, indeed, it is the same priest we're talking about from the movie Scarlet and the Black. To this day, William, it remains one of my favorite movies. I have a huge family. I have 50-some grandchildren. And I mean, I tell them about that movie, and we've watched it. It is amazing to see the young people, the teenagers and the younger children, be amazed that there was someone in our lifetime, and you know, that lived this out, that this was a true story. It was reality, and it inspires others. And that's what's so good about even today, as you said, bringing unity to so many people there in Ireland by people coming together to honor this man through the statue that's there, the copy of trees, so many different ways. What does it say to you, as a researcher, as an author, that had to affect you personally, not only doing the research, but that had to seep into your own heart as well as it did into mine, you know, seeing the movie, reading the books about him. What say you about that?
It has the most wonderful impact of strengthening my own faith and my own love for the church, in spite of all the flaws and the sins and even the scandals and the crimes you can point to, the individuals.
Yeah.
You never should make sweeping allegations. There have been millions of Catholics, many, many, the vast majority, good, honorable, decent, holy, including the priesthood. And when you see something bad going on or evil going on in the church, it breaks your heart. And yet, on the same token, when you see a man as heroic and as beautiful and as priestly and as saintly as Monsignor O'Flaherty, it revives your faith. Because, you know, the secular society tries to crush us with all the negativity, and it tries to remind us that this is the only existence, and that's a lie. It's not true. We have our faith. We have our ultimate victory in Jesus Christ Almighty. And Monsignor O'Flaherty knew that. So in reading about his life, to answer your question on a very personal basis, not just from a historical perspective, from a very personal perspective, it inspires me to love Christ, to love the gospel, to love the church, to love the Pope that much more, and to love our priests more. Our priests need our help. They've been caricatured and beaten down and attacked by the secular media, but the vast majority of them are good, honorable, and they deserve our support. So I just feel lifted up, and as a Catholic, by reading about this great man. And I think that he has been a blessing, and I think God is using him as an instrument to spread the beauty and the truth about God's Holy Church.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for being so open. I know we went beyond that half hour, but I think it's important. You spoke so eloquently and articulately about this. He's a hero. And you spoke so beautifully about his life. And I hope that our listening audience today, I hope it inspired you, regardless of your ethnicity, regardless of your religiosity. This is a man, you know, filled with holy boldness. But more than anything, he was indeed a disciple. He was one that many of us will be called to live that kind of life ourselves one day. You heard John Paul II, St. John Paul the Great. And now we hear our Holy Father Francis saying very much the same thing. There might come a time ourselves when we might be in those kinds of situations that we might be called to lay down our lives for someone or just for principle.
Especially when you think of all the Christians that are dying, being savagely persecuted today. Yes, it's so the same themes and ideas and principles that Monsignor O'Flaherty stood for are every bit as much with us today, and we must live up to those Christian principles if we want to help redeem the world. That's our mission in life, and I think we are very fortunate and blessed to have a pope like Francis and great priests to remember like Monsignor O'Flaherty. Thank you so much for having me, Kathleen.
It's been a blessing. If I ever get back to Italy to speak, I will look you up. Do you live in Rome?
I'm not in Italy right now. I'm actually in the United States.
So okay.
Thank you. But I appreciate that. I have been there. But so I would love to talk to you again sometime, perhaps on another issue. But
absolutely.
Thank God for programs like yourself, and God bless you and your ministry. And thank you once again. I'm honored to be on your program.
God bless you, William. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
My brothers and sisters, you know, each one of us have that holy boldness in us. Each one of us who love the Lord, serve the Lord to the best of our abilities, we can take our prejudices, just like Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty did. As a young man, his heart was rent. It was torn apart with resentment and bitterness. And yes, I've read in where he used the word hate when he saw so many of his Catholic friends being tortured and murdered. And yet, God prepared his heart, his mind, and his spirit to be able to forgive. That's the healing balm of Gilead. Each one of us, when we're wounded, when we're heartbroken, when we're disappointed, when we're crushed in spirit, when we've been rejected or ridiculed or ostracized or people closest to us have hurt us deeply and wounded our hearts, crushed us in spirit. When we open our heart to the Lord and ask Him to forgive them for us, when we ask Him to heal our hearts and comfort our souls, He does it. Make no mistake about it. And why does He do it? He does it just like He did it to Monsignor O'Flaherty. He does it as a show and tell, I like to say, that anything is possible with God. We can forgive the unforgivable. And that is the truth. I've experienced it in my own life on numerous occasions. We can forgive the unforgivable, and we can truly love the unlovable when we let go of the pain and the suffering and the hurt in our heart and put it at the foot of the cross. Because who knew more about all those things than Jesus Christ Himself? It was one of His, He was one of them, and they crucified Him. You know, He was, the Jews took Barabbas over Him. Can you imagine how He felt? He knew He came to save His people. And here, the people screamed, "Crucify Him! Crucify Him! Crucify Him! We want Barabbas," they screamed. And yet, hanging from the cross, He says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Can we do that? Is there somebody in your life today? Have you been wounded? Do you have righteous anger? And many times there is such a thing as righteous anger. You know, Jesus had righteous anger. He had righteous anger when He overturned the tables in the temple. And He said, you know, he sent them out. He was smacking His whip. He overturned the tables. But you know, in that story, you never hear where He actually hurt a person. He made a demonstration of His anger. That's all He did. And in doing so, he made a statement for all of us. It's not being angry. It's what we do with the angry. It's how we handle being angry. Do we try to hurt back? Do we try to put them down in some way or let others know how unfairly we've been treated? No. You get a good confidant, a good friend, maybe a good priest that you know, or a good family member that you know, or a friend that's a gift from God. And what do? You share your wound, your hurt, be vulnerable with that person. And as that begins to come out, it's out into the light and it cannot fester anymore inside. It's that festering that causes disease. And so when we can get it out, when we can talk about it, when we can offer those hurts and those sorrows and those wounds and offer them to God and put them at the foot of the cross of the Redeemer who redeems every one of those hurts and wounds and sorrows, takes them from us when we offer them to him. But in their place, he gives us grace. He gives us peace. He gives us a deep abiding joy that overcomes all those things that come against us in the world and in this journey of life that would cause us to stumble and fall. And when that happens, when he heals our wounds, we become wounded healers, as I told the beautiful young woman I spoke with today, right before I got here. He redeems those hurts, those wounds, the persecution, the alienation, the rejection. He redeems them when we put them at the foot of the cross and fills us with that peace that the world cannot rob us of. That's our God. So my brothers and sisters, if you're away from the church, this is an important time in the church. It is a time to come home to this sanctuary that we call One Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. It's one that calls us and challenges us to live like Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty and all the other saints that go before us. My brothers and sisters, if you are away from the church, come on home. We're not complete without you. And you have gifts and talents by virtue of your baptism that the world needs. So come on home. And allow the Lord to fill you with love and mercy and forgiveness and healing. And may he unite you to the mystical body of Christ in a new way. God willing, until we meet each other tomorrow, remember that you're never alone. That God will send angels into your life to accompany you on your journey. God bless.